This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Hey, y'all. Who dat and what is up? I'm Jeff Nowak. This is Inside Black and Gold, and it's going to be kind of a special edition of Inside Black and Gold. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see it's a different face to my right, left, whatever direction I need to be looking at, it's there. That is Devin Johnson. He's senior at UNO. You know, we're going to be doing some special projects over the course of this offseason, some special podcasts, and this is going to be the first of that series. I'm excited about it. Devin, how you doing this morning?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm thankful to be here, Jeff. Certainly, you know, it's a great opportunity to get on, talk some ball with a fellow ball knower, as people say nowadays. I'm definitely excited. So I'm looking forward to, you know, the opportunities coming.
I appreciate these. You know, last year I was visiting home, my family in Connecticut, and I went to the local bar and, you know, I was watching the NCAA tournament. It was around this time of year. And, you know, we were all just watching and everyone was gambling on the game, right? You know, and I was just, I can't remember what I said, but some like college kid looks at me and was like, "You know ball." And I was like, it was the best compliment I've ever gotten from some random like 19-year-old who I'd never met. And I was just like, "Thank you. I feel like I do." Anyway, so that's where we are. And, you know, it's NCAA tournament this year. As, you know, people on this podcast know, I'd love to sit here and brag about UConn, but they lost. So we don't need to get into too much of that. But
yes, okay.
Yes. So there's stuff to talk about, but not for me.
Hey, I was going to say, though, at least McNeese, they were able to make headway. They got their first NCAA tournament win in school history. Will Wade, who was the former LSU head coach who is now leaving McNeese, he was able to lead them. And I think that was tremendous, seeing that. I go to UNO. We are unfortunately a part of the same conference as McNeese. So I had to feel the angst of realizing that my team could have been in that same position. But I will say that was an early highlight of the NCAA tournament.
Go Pokes. Yeah, no, and now Clemson gets to deal with Will Wade more because he's going to NC State.
He's going to NC State. That's going to be amazing.
They get to score 13 points in the first half of more games. What a wild. I think they had like 50 points in the second half, but 13 in the first half. Like I feel like high school teams can do that. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. As you know, I could sit here and do a college basketball podcast. I'm not going to do that for the sake of our listeners. But what we are going to talk about today, we're going to get into, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to get a lot of your takes on the offseason so far. So that's going to be kind of the first segment. Second segment, I was at LSU's pro day yesterday. I have some thoughts. Will Campbell's arms magically got longer? How did that happen? We can talk about that. Was he on the stretching machine? Maybe that's why it didn't work out, because his arms were artificially anyway. That's a whole different animal. We are going to talk about it. I want to talk about Mason Taylor. I want to talk about where the Saints have been, because they were kind of all over the map yesterday with all those pro days. So we'll get into a lot of that stuff. But first things first, I just want to get kind of your take on the offseason, because in this podcast, it's kind of just me and Steve kind of bouncing our own thoughts off of each other and saying, I agree. You agree. Great. Let's move on. What has been your take? What has been your read of the offseason in general? How do you feel as a Saints fan? You grew up here, in terms of, you experienced the Drew Brees era. You maybe didn't necessarily get a ton before that, but now we're kind of moving past that. So how are you feeling about this team right now? Is there optimism? Is there frustration? Where are you personally?
I would say, first of all, this is an intriguing offseason, to say the least. We are entering, I feel as though we're entering a new era. There's optimism for me. There's optimism. Why is there optimism for me? Two very baseline facts. We have a Super Bowl winning head coach. We have a Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator. I don't really know when's the last time the Saints can say that, that they acquired that, to become the new leaders of their team. So that's where my optimism starts. I believe in Kellen Moore. I like the fact that we have a former quarterback as our head coach. I like the fact that he's coming from a winning organization. I think that the Eagles have set a standard for team building. And I think that Kellen Moore undoubtedly benefited from that. I think that we're going to see a new emphasis as far as our team, and I'm excited for those things. So honestly, I have a lot of excitement. Now, my only question is this the offseason that we're going to use to start the rebuild, or are we going to just try it out one more year with the last of the cogs that we have on the team? That's my one question. But regardless, I would say within the next 3 to 5 years, I'm extremely optimistic about the guys that we have leading the ship.
So are you old enough to remember Kellen Moore at BYU?
I am. I really am. Yes. Yeah. Yes. He's played in like that Andrew Luck kind of era.
Yes.
Yes. I remember those days.
Yeah. And I only ask because it's, to me, Kellen, one of the reasons I think the Saints are operating the way they are, which is, they're kind of trying to thread the needle, right? Yeah. Of trying to stay reasonably competitive while also not being, okay, let's go all in, right? And, I think part of that is like Kellen Moore doesn't know how to not win, right? Kellen Moore has won at every level he's been at, whether it's high school, winning state championships, whether it's in college. He has the most wins of any NCAA quarterback ever. That record still stands, whether it's at the NFL level, where even with the Cowboys, like people aren't in love with what the Cowboys have done in the postseason, but they won a lot of games with him as their offensive coordinator. That's now true. The Chargers didn't go well. But, goes to the Eagles and wins a Super Bowl. I don't think that it's in Kellen Moore's DNA to walk into his first head coaching job and just accept a scenario where, you're probably going to lose 15 games, right? Even though he probably could get away with it, because they're not going to hold him to a standard of you are in a position where you better go win right away, the way Dennis Allen kind of felt like he was.
Right.
So to me, I think to your point, why do I feel like should be a little bit more confidence in this team than what it's being painted to be? Is like, I don't know, Kellen Moore's a winner. And that's the opposite of what I would say about Dennis Allen. I don't think it's fair to call him a loser, but statistically.
But I was about to say objectively, statistically, you're telling the truth. I mean, he didn't win when he was the leader of the Raiders. You know, and he wasn't able to. We did have what, one winning season, the 9-8 season. But outside of that, you know, his history followed him. You know, and sometimes I feel like you have to kind of take note of that. Yeah, you know, maybe you can make the case that during his Raider tenure, he may have not have had the best, you know, card, the best deck of cards handed to him. But I would
say you were going
to
go with car. I thought you were going to go with the car pun, but you stayed away from it. And I respect that.
I missed it. But I will say, like, as far as the Saints, he had some things to work with. He has some things to work with. I feel like as far as Dennis Allen, too, like I think he struggled being me and you were kind of just talking about coaches being disciplinarians. I don't know if Dennis Allen was that guy to put his foot down when he needed to be. And that's important in the locker room. You need to have players that respect you. You need to have a voice that demands and reaches out to players. And you have to be accountable. You know, you have to be accountable yourself as a coach. I think players respect that. But then you have to hold other people accountable. So as far as Dennis Allen, I feel like, you know, those are some things that I saw in him that maybe was a problem. But, you know, for Kellen Moore, he's going to have to learn those things now. He's going to have to learn, okay, now I'm in a position to where the entire team is looking to me in terms of leadership. I have to hold myself accountable, not just the offense, you know. But, again, winning culture – winning, you know, since for 10 plus years now, he's won as a player, as a coach, as an assistant. So there's just a lot more confidence that is exuded, you know, to me out of Kellen Moore than a Dennis Allen.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. And we'll see how that goes. Like it's all, you know, first impressions right now when we're saying, hey, this is going to work out. Maybe it doesn't. But, you know, when it comes to Dennis Allen, you know, one of the things that really stuck out to me over the 2.5 years that I, you know, watched him be a head coach, and I don't know how it went with the Raiders. There's a lot of stories told or that didn't go well, whatever. Dennis Allen always had this facade that he would put out of being like a tough guy. Like if you didn't know any better, he always had a kind of a scowl on his face and he was kind of short with the media, but like in his core, he is not that.
Yeah,
he is way more of a softy than I think a lot of people realize from the outside. And I just don't think he demands that. Like, and like you're coming out, you're following Sean Payton, who is you know, the opposite of like, if you get on Sean Payton's bad side, he's going to send you out of town. Like, you're going to be on the Patriots and we're going to draft Ryan Ramczyk, right? Like, don't get on Sean Payton's bad side. I don't care who you are. It's not going to go well for you. Like, I kind of felt like D.A. was a bit of a pushover in that way. And that's why you end up with a scenario of Mike Thomas being Mike Thomas, right? Yeah. Like of Marshawn Lattimore walking out of meetings and stuff like that. Like, that's how you get to that point.
Yeah.
Is you are not real with people. So I think we can move on from there, but I agree with you 100%. Like, that's one of the reasons I feel a little more confident in the Kellen Moore era, because I think he's going to be able to come in and understand that a little bit better than DA, because I think DA was put in a difficult situation and it's not a situation you should have put him in, but that's where you were. Moving on, you know, beyond Kellen Moore, what would you say, you know, your favorite move of this offseason, and what's your least favorite move of this offseason?
I would say, it might be an unpopular opinion, but my favorite move of this offseason has to be the re-signing of Chase. Coming into last year, I really did believe that Chase Young could potentially revitalize his career down here in New Orleans. Chase Young is someone who I've watched since his days at Ohio State, and hindsight is 2020. So watching him playing alongside Nick Bosa, you know, I thought he would be the better pro. Nick Bosa has been the better pro. But Chase Young has every attribute possible that you would want out of if you could build a prototypical DN, that's the guy you want. I remember the first time I saw him in the locker room during OTAs. And I'm like, wow, you know, this guy, like when you see Chase Young stand next to Cam Jordan, it's a noticeable difference. Like Cam Jordan, he's a big dude, but Chase looks like he gets after it. And last year, I think, you know, the statistical numbers maybe didn't supplement everything. He only had 5.5 sacks. He did play, I want to say, at least, 14 to 15 games?
He played all 17 games.
Oh, he played all games. Yeah. Okay,
he appeared on injury report, which was actually pretty remarkable when
you consider, okay,
you know, yeah, what his career has been. Yeah.
Okay, so he played all games. He had 5.5 sacks. And I want to say he was 7th in pressures. He was top 8 for sure.
Top 10, yeah, top somewhere 10. In that range. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a pretty good stat. I would say one thing, too, that I saw as far as, like, visually, some sacks he just didn't finish. I think Chase Young easily could have maybe had, I don't know, 8-9 sacks had he just finished some. So I like that we established one position of need. In the current climate of the NFL, you need athletic defensive ends. And I would say that's been our one bane, is that we have this stigma of big, tall, more run-stopping oriented defensive ends. And you just got to move away from that. You have to move away from that. If you look at the Eagles, they got guys like Nolan Smith. This dude looks like a safety, you know, out there rushing the passer. But it's extremely effective because guys are looking to escape the pocket now. So I like Chase Young. I like his skill set. I like the production. I think the production can get better. Maybe Staley can extract more out of him. That's my number one sign.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a good one. You know, I think it'd be easy to say Justin Reed, it's a position of need, but you know, Chase Young's 25.
He's young.
Like it feels like he's older because he's been in the league. We've been talking about him since, you know, forever.
Yeah.
But he's 25 years old. And, you know, if this had been a situation to me where, like you mentioned, like he was healthy all year. Yeah. And that wasn't a given. Like he signed a 1-year, $13 million contract in part because he had to have offseason neck surgery and you didn't know what you were going to get out of him. They put all those incentives in his contract thinking, okay, well, if it doesn't work out, we can get some of that money back. He earned all of them. He played in every game. So there's one thing, like I feel good about his health. Second thing, like, and this is just from, you know, I think he's committed. I think he likes it here. I think he's working hard. And when you have, I think that's the issue. You know, I've always said this about Clowney. Like Clowney, Jadeveon Clowney could have been as good as he wanted to be. Mm-hmm. I just never got the impression that he cared all that much about being any better than he was going to be walking onto the field day one. I can do this physically. And like, there's a story about it at South Carolina. He was there. The coaches were getting on him because he wasn't doing his workouts. Then he went in and he set the school bench press record and walked away. Like, all right, let's talk later. Like that's how Clowney was. And right. I just think, you know, it would have been easy for Chase to walk in and do the same thing. But I think with the injuries, I think he's kind of got a chip on his shoulder now that never existed before because it didn't have to, because he was always that supreme athlete. So if you're getting a guy at 25 in his prime, has figured out what he needs to do to keep his body right and is doing the work. Yeah. Why wouldn't you sign that guy? And then you add to the fact that like there's pass rushers out there making $40 million a year.
Thank you.
You're getting this guy for 7 years, 3 years, $51 million. Mm-hmm. Like that's a pretty good deal to me. Like I agree. I think that's like people are just kind of in the gear of being angry about stuff right now. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's a scenario where he goes out there and makes that $17 million a year contract look like a steal. And it's also worth noting, like, the Saints couldn't stop the run at all last year. You're not getting a ton of sacks when you can't stop the run. True. Like, you can't get a sack when they're running the ball for 8 yards on first down. And in third and short, they're not holding onto the ball long enough for you to get a sack. So,
yeah,
I like that take. I like your take. Let's move on to, okay, what do you hate?
Hate is a strong word.
This is a podcast, man. Hate is where we live.
You're right. You're right. We're in a world of extremes. I hate, since we're using this term, because I guess I could go there. I hate the Brandon Cook signing. Okay. I mean, it's a reunion that felt a little unnecessary. We're at a time right now, we need physicality in our wide receiver room. Chris Olave, we make the joke about it every year, but the guy literally is maybe a hit or two away from having to potentially really look at his career. He has, what, 4 documented concussions, maybe 5, going back to Ohio State. So that's pretty serious. He's not the biggest guy. He's pretty gangly. He's a great receiver. I love his skill set. But, you know, he's objectively injury prone. Rashid Shaheed, I love Rashid Shaheed too. I think Rashid Shaheed, people don't really value his hands maybe as much as they should. Some of the big plays that he had last year really came courtesy of him making a miraculous catch. Derek Carr would heave it up. He's catching it in between two guys. Sometimes he would have to decelerate, still make a concentration catch. So I like Rashid Shaheed, but Brandon Cooks, he didn't feel like we needed him. We don't need him. Veteran wide receiver presence, sure, you know. But in terms of the production, you know, is Brandon Cooks giving us more than an MVS? I can't really say, you know. And then it's just about the longevity. Brandon Cooks himself, you know, he's getting older. He's, 32? He'll be 32 this upcoming season. So I just feel like we could have really went elsewhere as far as the wide receiver position. But, you know, I'll accept it. I'll acquiesce. But it wasn't ideal.
It's a good use of acquiesce. yeah, you know, it is interesting because MVS signed a 1-year, like, what, $4 million contract?
$4 million.
Could have probably brought him back. I think, you know, it's funny because we talk about Cooks as a reunion with the Saints. I kind of feel like you bring in Brandon Cooks because Kellen Moore wants Brandon. If Kellen was like, MVS is the guy I want, mm-hmm. he probably could have gone and got MVS. The only positive I'll say, like, $6.5 million in general, it sounds like a lot until you look at, I mean, Stephon Diggs is 31 years old, coming off an ACL tear, signed a $23 million per year deal. Cooper Kupp hasn't played more than 12 games since 2021, signed a $15 million a year deal. I don't know what Keenan Allen's asking for, but I would guess it's more than 6.5. So that's the only reason, like, as someone who wanted the Saints to operate as close to the line of reasonability as possible, knowing that, like we said, Kellen Moore is not going to want to come in here and lose games. That's the only reason I'll sell it, is like, hey, $6.5 million for a veteran wide receiver, which I would argue you needed. I would have preferred a Keenan Allen, but I would argue you did need somebody to be, you know, unless you really love Cedric Wilson. I can understand why people are griping about it. It's just funny to me because I think in general, it's looked at as a reunion. Like, we're bringing him back, kind of like Jimmy Graham, right? Like, mm-hmm. you brought Jimmy Graham back as kind of a mascot for the season, mm-hmm. right? To get fans excited. It wasn't about talent. It was about, hey, we can get Jimmy Graham back. Great. I don't think this is the same. I think this is more about, like, if you took Brandon Cook's name off of it and said, what do we need? A veteran wide receiver. This is our price point. Who can we go get? 31 years old, has skins on the wall. That's a Bobby Aber thing. I need to stop saying it. but it's like, that's what it is. And I think if you just like erase the Brandon Cooks of it all, I think the conversation would be different.
Yeah.
Do you agree? Do you disagree? How do you feel about that?
In terms of if you erase the Brandon Cooks and you replace it with who?
Anybody. 31-year-old wide receiver. 6 1,000-yard seasons.
Yeah, you know. I think that's literally what it is, because, see, when you were talking, it's not necessarily the player that's the problem. It's the skill set and the archetype of player relative to what we need. Brandon Cooks, you know, it's not a question about whether he's productive. You know, he is when he's productive, when he's healthy, he's productive. And he also has had that ability to be productive regardless of the situation that he's in. In LA, he was productive. In New England, he was productive. Early for the Cowboys, he was productive. And I was, obviously for us, with Drew Brees, you know, he was fantastic. So I don't think it's a question about his production, but it's his archetype. We need a guy that's a little bigger. And then, too, when you look at what they're playing, what he will be playing, you know, he's primarily probably going to be a slot guy. I would much rather have a guy like Keenan Allen playing in a slot for us, considering the skill set that we have on the outside and the speed that we have on the outside. So I think, if anything, that's it. I think financially it is definitely justified. You know, Brandon Cooks for $6 million a year in comparison to other guys. You know, relatively we're spending $1.5 million more than MVS. And I would say overall he's better than MVS. But again, it's just about the archetype of player. I'm taking a 6'4", 4'3 guy who can be a deep threat, you know, over a 5'10". Maybe, you know, he's declining into the 4'4"s or whatever. And I think that's just it. We're in the time right now in football where positional versatility matters. And I would say Brandon Cooks at this stage doesn't offer that as much as some other guys. Even Cooper Kupp, for example. I think Cooper Kupp, even within his age, you can still say, okay, this guy can mimic a number one on outside. And then within the slot, he's a nightmare, you know, to match up against.
Yeah, so. I think you nailed it, right? Like if your goal is to get speed, then why didn't you just go get the 6'4 guy, right? Who liked it here.
Exactly.
That's the part that doesn't make sense to me.
Who still feels like he has something to prove too.
Yeah. No, and he has juice. He has gas in the tank. He's got juice.
Right.
That's the one that, you know, maybe he likes Clint. You know, maybe he wanted to go and hang out with Clint. I don't know. Maybe he likes the Pacific Northwest. I don't know.
Yeah.
But and I do think it was unfair because hate is a strong word for any move in the Saints offseason because they haven't done anything really to hate. Like, it's hard to hate a move when you don't really make any aggressive moves. And that's kind of, I think if I hate anything, it is how unaggressive they were at the wide receiver spot. Yeah. But hey, maybe that's because they have big grand plans at number 9 overall to go get a big guy, right?
We'll see. I'll be honest. I hope that wide receiver isn't on the radar, but I'm becoming more accepting.
All right.
Can I speak about one more signing, though?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because maybe this isn't one that – I think this is the most trivial signing, and that's the signing of Juwan Johnson. We signed Juwan Johnson to, what, $30 million, $35 million?
3 years, $30 million.
3 years, 31?
30. I think 30. Justin
3 years,
is 31.
Okay, 3 years, 30. Yeah. I don't hate the signing. I don't love it. I think Juwan Johnson he's a questionable piece. I think in terms of, like, current tight ends, he's not a top 10 tight end. But he has a skill set. Again, like, we use the word skill set a lot. I think even with, like, current NFL scouts and GMs and stuff like that, they still like to see potential in some guys. I think Juwan Johnson has that air about him, like, that he hasn't fully unlocked his potential. And I kind of see it. I feel like to say that he had his best season last year, I don't think it was consistent. In terms of the production, it would be kind of splashy. He would have a big week here, a big week there. I question, you know, what would Juwan Johnson look like if we were to consistently see him get, I don't know, 5 targets a game on a week-to-week basis. So I say that to say, you know, I like it because there might be some potential within a new scheme, with the new offensive leadership in Kellen Moore and Nussmeier. Also considering that, you know, we have a coach who he used his tight end, Dallas Goedert, when he played us, he torched us.
Yep.
So, you know, there's hope there. But I know a lot of people don't care for the Juwan Johnson signing. I just say that, you know, I like it because I do think that Juwan Johnson is pretty talented. He provides some athleticism at the tight end position. He is a willing blocker at times. So we'll see how it turns out. But I just wanted to talk about it because I think a lot of fans, you know, they aren't too high on it.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And you know, my issue with how a lot of people are approaching it, and I appreciate the way you approached it, is people are talking about the contract as if it's him getting paid for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's him getting paid for the next 3 years. And to me, you can't make a case for whether it's a good value or not a good value until you see how they're going to use him. And if he continues to get 60 targets a year, then no, it's objectively not worth it. Mm. But if you look at how Kellen Moore has used his tight ends, and you know, we talked about, hey, the Saints don't have a physical chain mover type guy. If Jawan Johnson becomes that guy, if the offense features him to the stage where you're getting in the area of 90 targets and you're looking at a top 10 level production, then sure, it's a great value. He just has to deliver on it.
Yeah.
But no, that's exactly it. Like, if the Saints choose to use him in the way that you would expect a team to use a guy that is getting paid $10 million a year, then that's a different scenario. Because to this point, they haven't done that.
No.
Even at the level he was getting paid, which is $6 million a year, like, he was kind of the afterthought in that offense, at least in the first half of the year when you had receivers, you know?
Yeah.
When you didn't have any receivers, you had no choice. And I think he played well. So I'm on board with you for sure. But all right, let's hit the break, come back, talk more about LSU's Pro Day. That was a long segment, so we'll try to keep those well on the shorter side. I always say that, but then I lie to people. So hopefully I can be telling the truth this time. But this is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Devin Johnson, new voice we're adding to the podcast rotation. I thought that was a great segment. I appreciate a lot of what you had to say. And so we'll come back. We'll talk more about magically extending arms and go-go gadget, Will Campbell, stuff like that. This is Inside Black and Gold. Stick around.